This is the May 20 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Brian Stark of the Andersons from Champaign County, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to it online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Just click and play at willag.org, or if you prefer, you can find it as a podcast in your favorite podcast applications, too. Places like Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast. Let's begin by getting a list of items we should take up for the day. Let's start with you, Brian Stark.
I think the biggest thing that we are watching very closely is the collapse in old crop bean basis, and will that spill over into the corn sector as well?
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Commodities gone wild. Talk to your cash green guy. And option volatility.
And Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, some technicians are saying the top is in. I think we ought to discuss, is it?
Well, let's start with this break in the basis. Tell me about soybean basis.
I think the market got caught off guard here in the last week to 10 days as soybean basis peaked with the rumor and then confirmation of South American boats working into the southeast as well as potentially the Gulf. And I think the basis game we thought would continue to be explosive through the summer. I think the other problem that has weighed heavily on the old crop bean basis is the lack of meal demand and the ability to get it to market to counter some of the strong soybean oil demand we've seen in crush. So it's a battle of logistic and capacity where some of these domestic crushers are struggling to find a home for meal, and we don't have a lot of meal storage. So until that sorts itself out, we found that the end user has developed very good coverage, and now it feels like the knife is falling and we've yet to stabilize. The biggest question we have is, will we see the same thing in corn? That's yet to be determined.
So I have a follow-up for you on this question. Does this mean that when we go into the end of this year, to the beginning of next year, that we're not as short of soybeans as we thought we were, at least as it relates to the ending stocks?
I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think we got the market looked at crush margins, and they're still very good. So while you can find the beans, and you would continue to pay up to own the beans to crush them, the problem is the divergence in demand of the products. And I think because of that, some of these end users have found a way to navigate what they can handle in known destinations for their end product, utilizing maintenance to extrapolate and extend the life of the old crop supply with a few imports to get to new crops. So it feels like the old crop bean basis story is winding down and just about over.
Kurt Kimmel, you have a follow-up?
Yeah, the word is we've maybe rationed some of this demand here and we're due to back and fill. But if you turn back the clock just a little back, we were concerned about getting meal for livestock guys this summer, but it's kind of reversed in through here. But with the long bean lines and dumping beans and plenty of beans around the basis, like Brian said there, you got to wonder, too, on the livestock side, if these hog numbers aren't quite as high as what they originally thought due to viruses and also euthanizing some of these hogs here last fall and winter.
So we've got a problem that's developing for at least soybean usage in the United States. Relatively speaking, in part because we have exports coming into the United States, and there may not be as many hog numbers out there as expected.
Yeah, we're fixing to find out. We got a hog and pig report coming up, and we still have plenty of livestock to feed in through here, but we've probably taken the top end off. There's still limited supplies of beans around, and above all, the commodity funds seem to be in charge of the market for right now.
Yeah, so one of the things I'm wondering about, because there are a lot of moving parts in this one, meals piling up, oil has been high usage last fall. We just had record crush. Part of that was because vegetable oil use across the planet went up as people were home and using more cooking oil. And now we have renewable fuel, diesel that is, in the mix that appears to be having a call for the soybean oil side of this. But meal is hard to store, as we heard earlier, and oil is the big push. How does the market reconcile it all?
Well, I think that that's the big question, Todd. I think that as we look at things, we've heard that, number one, China's not using as much bean meal. They're trying to cut back on that. They fired their guy that talked too much over there. They didn't like that they said they were short of all that stuff. We are hearing that there's problems with the African swine flu over there, that they aren't going back. They say they are back up to their numbers. They're going to use less corn. They're going to feed other things along the way. But I think bean meal is still the protein of choice to blend in hog feed like that. I think it's going to be good and along the way. But I think that here again, like we say, they've also been, they had something where they said they're not going to promote overpriced commodities. They felt the beans over $16 in the U.S., and by the time they got over there, were overpriced. They helped push this down and let basis break and didn't offer as much and weren't buying beans. How long has it been since we've seen an old bean purchase? You know, it's all been new crop stuff, corn and beans, and no bean purchases from the U.S. in, what, the last 10 or 11 weeks? So basically, they let it fall back down. They want the bean price to come back down. They are looking for a price to buy beans, I'm sure. I just don't know what that level is.
So is it that we're, because we've been so short of bean supplies, is it that we're simply looking for a place to stabilize at this point in time?
That's a good question, and I say that along the lines, we are looking for a place for this beans to stabilize. We're looking. It's pulling corn down. We've still got, wow. I mean, look at our sales already booked for fall corn and everything along the way. But yet we're seeing no real bean purchases. We're seeing they aren't buying as many Brazilian beans as they had at this time last year. They're only about half of what they had sold at this time last year to China. So they are really backing off and making this market come down because they are the bean market of the world.
Yeah, I would agree we're trying to find a place to stabilize. I think the thing that we have to look at is that normally during this time, export demand does wane and shifts to South America. And I think it is a domestic crush play. And I think some of the end users are showing signs that while we're very snug, we're comfortable, at least for the time being. In fact, one entity, private company today, rolled their bids from the July to the November already. I can't remember how quick that's happened in the past. Generally, you don't see that movement until you get deeper into June before we get into physical delivery of the July contract. But they're going to try and take advantage of the inverse and walk their payables back. And I think that's a sign of coverage and demand at least being satisfied here in the near term.
Yeah, the bull spread might have run its course in through here. Why pay up old crop when you buy a cheaper new crop? I guess the commercials, in a sense, are fairly well booked up till the end of July. And if there's a situation at end of July to August, it'll definitely probably take some downtime. But if you look back at the big picture here, the bean market was fairly well front-loaded. That's been taken care of. Now the question is, will the corn follow suit or not?
I want to get to the corn, but farmers right now are saying, hey, wait a second, and I've asked this once, but aren't we seriously tight on soybeans this year and next year?
Well, this year we are. You know, we'll see how this old crop unfolds, but, you know, if everybody's got the product they need and booked, it's going to come down to the last few days. It'll come down to how fast the beans get to the elevator. As far as new crop, when you roll the old crop supply-demand balance sheet into the new crop, yes, it's tight, but there's the moving part of acres, there's the moving part of yield, so there's a lot of market in front of us trying to price this in.
Let's turn your attention to one of the things that impacted Wayne, the marketplace, on a daily basis week, and just discuss it, how it moved into the marketplace. That was the fall of Bitcoin and what happened there. The last time I looked, and I don't look very often, it was down something like 5,000 points or about 11%. It just spilled over and wreaked havoc in a lot of places.
It sure did. And I think China had something to do with that, something they said went on that they didn't want to do it. I guess the car auction in Indianapolis this weekend is taking Bitcoin and Dogecoin or whatever it's called that way now this weekend. Boy, their car price went up, didn't it, that way. But no, I think that that was one of the things that happened. But I think that overall, maybe just the whole attitude of the inflation part. I think when a lot of the states are coming back in here now, and they're not going to take the extra unemployment money and they're going to put people back to work. They're going to go back to work if they aren't getting that extra $300 to $500. I think that we're seeing the, you know, things take off like that. And I think that basically the inflation market was going wild because nobody could get help. We heard that one of the restaurants that we like to go to is closing on Mondays now because they can't get enough waitresses. I think with doing some of the things we're doing here, we're going to get people back to work. Things are happening along the way. And I think that that is one of the things that's happening going on.
Are you concerned about inflation?
Well, there's always been inflation. It depends what sector. Each sector takes its turn, and it depends how you classify inflation. As far as interest rates go, I think the Fed has tools to keep that in somewhat in control. But when you got a lot of money chasing a few products, you're going to have higher prices for a period of time.
Let's switch directions and talk about corn. What do things look like in East Central Illinois from your perspective, and how do you use that to plan as you move forward for the grain elevator?
I think, you know, from a corn perspective, we've seen a little bit of influence on the bean decline, at least on the Illinois side. It's a complete dichotomy to what we see in West Central Indiana today, where basis remains firm. The difference I see between corn and soybeans is the fact that with the struggles of the Safrinha crop and that representing 75% of Brazil's corn production and not really knowing how small that crop is, you take really in our mind out the ability for economically to make sense to import corn. That should help support corn basis at least in the near term, but I think we've talked about this. Inverses matter. And I think that's important for the producer to understand that July SEP is 85 to 90 cents inverted today. So the producer really needs to look really hard on when do I liquidate my crop, because come July 1, it's going to be worth 90 cents less.
July 1 sounds earlier than usual.
It is earlier than usual, but we haven't seen these inverses in quite some time like this, if not ever. I've been in the grain business 20 years, and I think back to 2008, the last time we saw prices close to $8, we were in a carry market. So this is a different area we're navigating through, and I think the important thing we've recommended, if anything, is at least move your grain on basis against the July before the processors, like they've started doing beans, start rolling their basis out to the deferred months and take some of that inverse away from the ability to sell cash.
Well, over in my area, the farmers' bins are just about empty, or they would be empty if they could haul their corn in. The elevators over there are full. They're dumping limited amounts. They have to get a train in to dump their corn. The farmers are pretty well sold out of old crop corn now. They realized it was high-priced a dollar ago. Not when it was a dollar higher, but when it was a dollar lower than this. But there's a lot of grain has moved. Most of the guys are down to just gambling stocks as far as we go. I think the big question that they have in is, what's it going to be on the new crop? We're seeing some acres not in our area. I mean, in the area that I talked to, mainly close, within 100 miles of Newmarket, they stayed with their rotations. But as we get down into Kentucky, we get down into Arkansas, we get over into Ohio and places where the rain has come in and stopped them, I'm hearing guys have generally put out 2,000 acres of cotton. That switched to beans and corn. I'm hearing, you know, in Kentucky, that where they had the 5, 8, 10 inches of rain like that, we're seeing some of their early corn that was drowned out, and they're coming back in with beans. So, you know, we're seeing some changes around like that, and maybe some corn acres picked up. The Olden, Sparks, Informa, Market, whatever their name is this week, can we really get another 4 million acres of corn planted? Probably not, but we could probably get 2.5. And I think we're going to see some more bean acres just because of the lateness of the Mid-South and all the rain that's went through that area.
I was thinking about this just a little bit. And does it matter that there are 4 million more acres in the United States, or does it matter that there are 4 million more acres in the Northern Hemisphere? And how much difference does that make? So did high prices cause farmers in China or the government there, one of the two, and or Ukraine to keep the planters rolling for corn, as well as in the United States, and combined, can that be a problem for total production around the planet?
Well, if you look at the acres around the world, I don't know so much about China or Ukraine. I think the most the concern would be the Southern Hemisphere. I think you'll see a pickup there in general. But you take 2 million acres, take that times trend line yield, or, you know, 180 bushels or whatever, that does add up. But the weather guy is going to be the one in charge here from here on out, because you move that yield up and down 5-10 bushels per acre, that makes a huge difference on the bottom line.
I would agree with what Kurt said. I think the biggest thing we have to recognize is that we're coming in at a very tight, not only United States, but global balance sheet, especially depending on how South America turns out. And I think you have to recognize that through the USDA's recent estimate for 21-22 of 26 million metric ton of export demand from China, they've booked almost 40% of that. And I think one of the things that came out from the May 12th crop report was how the USDA faded export demand in their first estimates. And I think that's potentially an upward arrow. So back to Kurt's points, yield matters big time in the United States this year, as well as a follow-up crop this coming winter for Brazil and Argentina in the Southern Hemisphere.
To quote Paul Cooley, Todd, Wayne, the weather matters.
Given that USDA has a $5.70 season's average cash price, and at the time that they released the WASDE, that was actually what December futures contract was trading at or near when it began to drop, is there potential for this marketplace to really gain on the cash side?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there probably is. That was another one that jumped out, the higher price. It's almost like they were expecting potential growing demand. And I think, to my point earlier, that the export number can continually climb. And I think that that cash component of whether we'll see measurable carry once we get into harvest is going to be an interesting one. I think today, if I saw DeSmart's corn approach 8-9 cents carry, I think that's a good hedge to be protecting in case any weather issue develops.
Well, the commodity funds have been playing keep away for us since they run the market up, keeping the futures higher, and you have to chase to get on board here. I'm not quite for sure, certain, too, if China's not playing the same game here. They're playing keep away from the new crop corn, booking this ahead of time, keeping it away. So any type of break in here, I think the end user, which is human, will probably want to gather some coverage here at least through early October.
This week in Kansas, they ran the Kansas Wheat Quality Tour, covers parts of Colorado and Oklahoma as well. Those were some big numbers, record numbers, actually the largest numbers they've had since 2000. Does that make much of a difference either to the wheat market, clearly it probably did, and or the corn market?
Well, it does, Todd, and it wouldn't have used to make near as much because hog farmers, cattle farmers really like to feed corn, and the corn was available. We always had corn. It was cheaper than wheat. We always had at least a little premium. It's when it got about the same price that we looked at that. But because of everything that's happened this year and the wheat is available around the world, there's been good wheat stocks, heavy wheat stocks. We've seen all of these people in their feed industries say, hey, we need to figure how much wheat we can put in the ration instead of this really, really expensive corn.
I know these wheats are different, and the Andersons does deal with wheat going out through Toledo on a regular basis, soft red rather than hard red. But how does it all work together for the export market?
Well, I think obviously hard red is preferred because of the protein content, but soft red wheat obviously could command some demand based on whether wheat's cheap enough to, as Wayne said, work its way into rations and more versus more expensive corn. And I think wheat, to me, given some of the tour results this past week showing a pretty decent sized crop, continues to be the laggard. I think it's going to be a follower versus the typical leader we've seen in commodity-based rallies here the last couple of years.
You know, the concern was the dry weather out west, the frost freeze, losing wheat acres going to corn or some other commodities. With this report, wheat better than it is, they're going to keep it and feed pasture as long as they can. But, two, one thing you got to remember is this sorghum and milo market is hot. And I think if you're going to see some replacement, it's not going to be corn, beans, it's going to be sorghum and milo out west.
This sorghum market is hot. I know that a lot of guys down in the Mid-South have really, they planted more. They contracted it when it was a dollar over basis, and they priced that over corn. So they were doing that at times. And they, I know that two of my guys in Arkansas are going to be planting at least 1,000 more acres of milo than what they planted last year.
It appears that the weather in the northern plains for the Dakotas, maybe part of that northwestern part of Iowa, is turning better. How much concern should producers have that this will put pressure on the marketplace?
Well, you sow in the dust and watch the bins bust, I guess. But, yeah, if they get some moisture, they'll get off to a good start. That fringe area, you got to watch that, because that kind of adds that extra or takes away the extra premium or bushels involved.
Tell me a little bit more about how bushels across the United States flow when we are in short in areas. So if the Northwest is short, does that matter very much for us here in our part of the world?
I think it does. I think you look at Chicago Beyond's market. That's typically the market that we roll over when we're trying to shift grain from east to west. And I think what's interesting is the west has been just as firm basis-wise as the east has been. So it's a lot harder to move stocks from where they are to where they ain't, because both sectors, if you divide the Corn Belt in half from the Mississippi, are showing really tight scenarios this year. Now, the east, it seems, has backed off a little bit quicker than we're starting to see happen in the west. So if grain is going to pencil economically to move from east to west, that would be the direction it would flow.
In a similar vein, the southeast has put far more beans in recent years than ever before. Actually, some corn acres as well. Has that cut into the marketplace that you service?
I think, yeah, that from a demand perspective, it's easy to look and say, well, we've got tight stocks. We've got to figure out how's the end user, the livestock producer, going to survive and have enough supply to get to new crop. And what we realize is that window is not as long as you think, because the local crop down the southeast will start coming off in August. So they're really talking the next 60 to maybe 90 days at most.
Yeah, logistics and transportation, that's the key. If you go back a year, year and a half, that northwest was plugged up because we weren't exporting anything to China due to trade war. Reversal, complete opposite here if we don't get moisture up there.
Let's talk about what farmers ought to do. I don't think they'll have beans left, and they can do what they want with them. What should they do with old crop corn at this time?
Well, I think I highlighted it earlier. I think in our opinion, or my opinion, I would at least at bare minimum, if you're friendly to the board, which I think there's a lot of uncertainty from a corn demand perspective and crop size, you at least need to move it on a basis contract prior to the end user moving his bid, and the risk gets elevated as we approach June and get deeper into the month. So something that needs to be locked up and sewn up probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks at most.
Yeah, I agree. You need to get to where you want to be. We're a lot higher than we were last fall and through there. But the main thing is you got to visit with your cash grain guy. You got to know where you are on your marketing. You got to know where you are on bushels and so forth. You got to stay on top of it on some of these accumulator contracts. Did you get doubled up, kicked out, or whatever? You got to push the pencil and know where you are.
Old crop corn, and if you could transition to new crop as well, please.
Well, I think Brian said it all. I remember when we owned our elevators, when we got calls from people that only call once every 2 weeks or whatever and wanting to buy corn, it was going to go up. Those calls have stopped. Brian knows that. You know, we're not in the rail business anymore, but I can tell you from what he said, he knows what he's talking about. It's time to get bases set on old crop corn. New crop corn, wow, that's going to be the thing, because we've got a lot of weather to deal with. But I'm thinking that, you know, I had one of the advisory firms that I watched said he bought calls that were down over 50 to 70% from what they were at the top. And I think it's time to maybe pick up some of those cheap calls, price some corn, or, you know, set some bases, price some corn for fall, and have some calls there to help you out if we're wrong.
We'll get the other two of you on new crop corn.
Yeah, I think you just got to use a scale-up selling approach. We did the KISS theory. We kept it simple. Price flooring through there. We've rolled some of those puts into actual cash sales. If you were one that sold calls, well, when you get to that point where you sold the call in the futures, convert those to cash sales and stick to your original plan. One thing on options you got to remember or keep an eye on, volatility is real high, so it's really tough to buy something to get it to work.
Yeah, I would agree. I think our preferred approach has been a min-max type strategy, a fence strategy, buying a put, selling on money, call. I think in this environment for new crop, you want to remain fluid. I don't think this is an environment you want to be static. I think Wayne hit the nail on the head. If you do sell cash or you do hedge, look to buy a break and replace it with a call option to give yourself some upside, because volatility will remain very high as we go through this important growing season.
And we'll close out by talking about new crop. Soybean marketing strategies, have they changed in the last week because of the break in the basis?
I don't think on new crop they've changed as much. I think the biggest thing we've noticed in the producer, and I think this is okay from our standpoint of hedging the grain, leaving basis open. I think that's a preferred approach because there could be some early premiums in soybeans, maybe more so than corn for early harvested beans, depending on if you got them planted early. So I think that's the way we'd approach, but still same thing with beans. I think you want to remain fluid and non-static in your marketing decisions.
Yeah, I agree. We like the price floor approach. Stay flexible in your marketing and keep looking around, because there's some real opportunities out there, on whether you're marketing to a feeder, an ethanol plant, or a crusher. Just pay attention.
It's still weather, Todd, and that's the thing we're looking at. But I do think that we have broken hard. $16 was the area that stopped us here. China's trying to push this market down. I don't know that it won't be there when we get there, but I think that we're going to see a lot when we see the planning, you know, not the planning intentions, but the final report of how many acres planted. If we get less than 1 million acres more of beans, I think we got one more rally left.
Any final word from each of you? I think we'll start with you, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana.
I think everybody should be looking for an opportunity to buy a more reasonable, there aren't a cheap call out there, a more reasonable call, but then get a little more oomph in your marketing plan, and let's price a little more fall corn and beans.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
It's going to be really warm and humid this weekend. I'm going to be in St. Louis. If you give me a shout, because I want to make sure you stay hydrated over the weekend there. But seriously, this coming weekend is Memorial Day weekend. Some talk about Indy 500, a three-day weekend. But our hearts and prayers go out to those who have served and those who have given the ultimate sacrifice to keep the country the way it is.
And Brian Stark of the Andersons.
I think the biggest thing I learned today is the correlation between Bitcoin and corn price movement. But outside of that, I would certainly say that producers need to make sure that we watch spreads in the new crop. I'm a firm believer that given as strong as a demand base as we have, it's going to take more than just one crop to build back into a sizable carry market where your space is valuable. You need to think about that. It could be a second crop being from South America, but watch your spreads and then be active in a fluid type marketing strategy as the market starts to recover here into the summer season.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists, including Brian Stark, Kurt Kimmel, and Dwayne Nelson. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.